and welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Tom Edwards. For today's art discussion, we're staying local in London to talk about the openings that have been making headlines in the capital over the past week. Joining me in the studio is Ossian Ward, Head of Content at the Listen Gallery, who will be our guiding light through the next 15 minutes. Ossian, welcome to the show.
Hi.
Good to have you with us, as ever.
Thanks.
Let's begin at the brand spanking new Design Museum in Kensington, which has been masterminded by architect John Pawson. The opening has been a long time coming. Opening 2 years later, no less, than originally planned. First and foremost, Ossian, what do you make of the new building? Worth the wait?
Yeah, it's quite incredible. So it was the old Commonwealth Institute, which was a much unloved thing, and they've completely ripped the belly out of it. And essentially what they did was they took the roof, put it on stilts, took all the walls and everything out of the middle, and Pawson's filled it up from inside, and then they just lowered the roof back on. And the roof is this incredible hat made of all these parabolas and different angles. It's kind of like a wave on top. And it's quite impressive because you walk in and you don't see the whole of this roof. It's quite hard to encapsulate this strange wave shape. So the more you go up this central atrium, you kind of walk up the stairs, the more of it is revealed. So it's quite special. I think, you know, people have said, well, why didn't you just build a whole new museum, seeing as you rip the guts out of it? But actually, there's a point to it. The brutalist kind of architecture on top is quite something.
And what about how it sits then amongst its neighbours? Because you've obviously got, you know, the V&A, Serpentine, Natural History Museum. They're all not a million miles away. Is it set fair to be an appropriate bedfellow for some of those others?
It certainly changes the landscape of that area, which is sort of a bit unloved, you know, in terms of new builds and things. But definitely where the old Design Museum was on Shad Thames, you know, that was quite a hard trek, and that was a difficult building, a small building. It was never meant really to be a purpose-built museum, so that had always had that element of not being perfect for these kind of shows. But this has permanent exhibition space on the top, so you start at the very top with the new purpose-built collection spaces, which are quite interesting. They're sort of not chronological, but more about makers, users and designers, how we use objects, how we use them, and how they're made. And so you have things like interactive elements where you can pick up an object and transport yourself to the 1950s, you know, with a little bit of tech in a mirror that helps you out. Or you can look at the difference between Apple, Olivetti and Brown and these kind of classic brands and where they've come from. So those collection displays are something they couldn't do in the old building. There just wasn't enough room to do that. So, and then there's temporary exhibition spaces downstairs, which are also delightful. And the new exhibition they've started with is called Love/Fear, which is almost like a kind of contemporary art group show, I'd say. It's less of a design. It's more like a set of installations. So you have this wonderful, dark lit sort of showpiece around these amazing garments made in China by this woman using traditional handicrafts, but she makes these kind of almost like science fiction sort of homespun designs, which are wearable, but only just. And other things, there's an incredible robot that kind of follows you around the room. One of these big industrial robots are built to make cars or something, but it's got a sensor that sort of follows you around the room and kind of quite scarily just sort of darts around looking at you and coming close. That was quite something. And then Rem Koolhaas and his agency OMA created the very aptly named EU room. So it's like a room set where you can find everything from, you know, Polish chairs and Portuguese pottery. So there's a bit of every European country, if you like. And these blinds at the back show you all the different countries and all the different flags and even a kind of EU flag. And it's obviously very Brexit friendly for us in Britain at the moment. So that's a great opening show curated by Justin McGurk, one of their full-time curators. So yeah, it's certainly raised the bar from previous Design Museum iteration. And yeah, I can't see it being anything but a success, really, where it is and, you know, what it's capable of.
Well, that's good. That's a positive way to start, and a good inaugural exhibition to kick things off, which is Fear and Love, Reactions to a Complex World, on at the New Design Museum in Kensington until the 23rd of April. To Vauxhall next.
Yes.
Where lives Damien Hirst's Newport Street Gallery, a space solely dedicated to items from Hirst's vast personal collection. Since it opened last year, we've seen work by painter John Hoyland, which I think we talked about, sculptor Jeff Koons, of course, the latest artist to adorn the walls, Gavin Turk, in an exhibition called Who, What, When, Where, How and Why. A great deal of questions, Ossians. Are there any answers provided?
The answer is Gavin Turk to all those questions.
So again?
Yeah. It's interesting, first, that Hearst has such a collection of some of his favourite artists that you can actually, this is a 25-year retrospective, so it does actually do all of those questions. You know, it tells you enough about the artist. And it begins with Gavin's own signature. I mean, you know, in a way, his work is about himself. He's made effigies of himself as, you know, the Sex Pistols, as a Warhol figure, as, you know, a guard, as a drunk person, as a sailor. And that's quite a scary room, actually, all these mannequins looking very much like Gavin, kind of staring at you. And, you know, you also get his signature. His signature is everywhere. So what Gavin does is he appropriates other artists' work and then will sort of reassign the signature to himself. So a lot of his work is about his signature on bits of paper or on a mirror or somewhere where you'll notice it. There's a beautiful sign as you walk in that just says Gavin Turk established, and it looks like a sign from the sort of 1850s, a shipyard or something, and it's just kind of above the door when you get in. So he's obviously playing with his own identity, and I think were it just for the first few rooms, the most famous example of which is the blue plaque on the wall that says Gavin Turk, sculptor, worked here, which he famously flunked his Royal College degree, where that was the only thing in the room. And that's been installed in its own vast room. It's called Cave, and it's a bit of a play on the, you know, the artist cave or the man cave, or the idea that the artist did work in this space. But there is more to his work than that. So I would say that it doesn't just begin and end with Gavin Turk. There's a little bit more.
And how does he manage that? Because it is a thing, you know, the artist as the subject, but almost as the sort of commodity, you know, the commodification of his own work. You know, it's a risky strategy, in much the same way, actually, that appropriating maybe better known works by even more celebrated artists is similarly risky. Do you think he, when you see an exhibition that runs over, as you said, 25, 30 years of his career, do you think actually this is someone who has pulled off the trick?
Yeah, because I think that's the temptation, is to do the face value work and think, okay, he's doing Warhol in this room, in this room he's doing Boetti, in this room he's doing someone else. But actually he does them very well. So, you know, there's this room of the Warhol room, let's call it, where he has wallpaper, which is based on Warhol's wallpaper, and he has these car crash paintings, which are like his disaster paintings. But what he's done is he's taken a white transit van and made them into the disaster. So you get this very British, humorous, ironic take, and there's actually a white transit van in the middle of the room that's just been compacted into a kind of beautiful John Chamberlain-esque sculpture, but it's a white transit van. So he knows that these things are up for ridicule as well. And actually what really crowns it off is by the end of the show, he essentially puts it then all in the rubbish bin. So there's this giant skip at the end, this black gloss skip, which is a very beautiful object, but it's just a, you know, high-sided skip. And these amazing bronze works, which he's made of sleeping bags. So there's a sleeping bag, two sleeping bags, which absolutely look real, but they're bronze painted to look dishevelled. And then there's the kind of detritus around it. So the dustbin bags are the famous ones that he's made, which are also painted bronze. But then there's everything from a kind of flat tire to a couple of broken paving slabs to, you know, a McDonald's chip packet or whatever, you know, all kind of crumpled up, just thrown away on the floor of the last room. And that makes you think, okay, not only does he know his place and he knows how to play this game, but he can also really take it back down to its kind of most basic level and sort of also just throw all that stuff away at the end.
Just last one on this, because it is interesting. You start off by talking about the fact that it's Hearst's collection, obviously. And that does add rather a layer, doesn't it, to, you know, many other big gallery or museum shows. You don't get that sense of the relationship between, you know, the proprietor almost, and then the artist. Do you think that it does add something every time, regardless of whether it's a contemporary or whether it's an artist who's no longer with us? The fact that you're viewing it through this prism of, you know, Hearst's role, his friendship in some cases, or his experience with the artists themselves.
Yeah, I think that really coloured my experience of the Coons show, because you just looked at these vitrines with the basketballs in them and you thought, okay, that's where you got the shark from. You know, there was a real relationship or a kind of homage. But I think with Gavin, there's more of a kind of a friendship in terms of someone who's committed to his career so much that, you know, he's known him since the YBA days, but he's also supported him. You know, he's bought a lot of his most famous works, some of which, you know, look like maybe Saatchi had them at one point, then he bought them on, but he's also supporting him up until the very day. So it tells you something more about Hurst as a collector than it does an artist, whereas I thought the Coons was just a very much like, I'm paying homage to my hero. And he obviously liked John Hoyland as a painter. But this is more about friendship, I would say. Mm-hmm. I don't know how close they are, but they must be, you know, they must get on well enough to curate such an enormous show together.
Indeed. Well, Gavin Turk, Who, What, When, Where, How and Why is on at the Newport Street Gallery in Vauxhall until the 19th of March. Austin, let's round off today's show with a trip to Tate Britain. Glasgow-based multimedia artist Rachel McLean is currently on show. Tell us a bit about McLean and what's on offer. I haven't visited, but I've seen some pictures. Mm-hmm. I've got to say, I was lightly traumatised.
Yeah, it's certainly a trip, and you certainly wouldn't take your younger members of the family, because although the first time she really came to prominence was during the British Art Show, she had this wonderful sort of hour-long film about our relationship with our devices, our personal devices. And she has this kind of jolly, amazing look about her films and her work, which is this kind of smiley face, emoji type characters, you know, all bright colours, bubblegum, but there's something sinister underneath. I mean, I think you got that from the first film, but this is the second film. And talking about the what, where, who, what, why questions, this one is called What You Emoji Happy About, or What You Smiling About. And yeah, it's gone to a much darker place. So in this version, instead of kind of just measuring your happiness with, you know, an emoji thing or a click or a comment or a like on your Facebook, which is a lot of what her work's about, is this sort of, you know, our interaction with each other through a screen. This one has gone worse and darker in terms of a future in which not only are we worried about where we're going to get our water from, but now it's like, where are we going to get our data from? So you have all these zombies wandering around slathering, saying, we need more data. And it is properly frightening. So yeah, she's incredible for a, you know, a young girl. She's going to represent Scotland at the Venice Biennale next year. Not only are the films very sophisticated, but they're becoming quite mature, even in a kind of X-rated horror core type way.
Well, I was going to ask you about the Venice Biennale in 2017. What do you think she might do for that commission? Because it's someone who's, yeah, unafraid to ask some quite difficult questions, quite challenging work. I mean, are you excited about where that could go?
Yeah, and I think, you know, she can obviously do the scale. I think she's also got a show on in Manchester at the moment, which I haven't seen, so I'm not sure where the sculptural elements will come into it. But in terms of the film, the production value is very high, and she's obviously now beginning to kind of dig a bit deeper into this iconography of, you know, the happy-go-lucky emoji type figure, which is now getting darker, and the characters are becoming more nuanced and sort of, you know, more dystopian. You get these kind of, there's a scene in a coffee bar where there's no coffee, but he's desperate to stick his, you know, cable in to get a bit of Wi-Fi juice or whatever, you know, and it's really kind of, it gets much darker and it goes to a different place. So I think she's obviously learning, you know, what she can do technically and sort of in terms of her dark world that she's exploring.
Delve into the dark world yourself. You can catch Rachel McLean's exhibition at Tate Britain until the 2nd of April. And that brings us to the end of today's programme. Thanks, Austin, for being here, as always.
No problem.
You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Tom Edwards. Our producer's Holly Fisher. The show was researched by Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Join us at the same time tomorrow for a Brazilian music review, no less. But for now, thank you very much for listening.